everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which can be found at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is your host, Jasper. I'm upset because Ghostface Milla is upset, and Ghostface Milla is upset because I made him see this movie. His post-viewing texts were a little hostile. On this episode, we'll be taking roughly a half hour to grumble about Spy Kids, All the Time in the World, the fourth entry in Robert Rodriguez's Spy Kids series, the second to be presented in 3D, and the first to come with a scratch and sniff card, all so you can experience failure with more senses than usual.
How's my girl? You just leaving work?
Yeah, just tying up a few things.
9 months pregnant, still working around the clock. You've got to be the most dedicated interior decorator that ever lived.
Can I say, I love my work. Ooh. Guess who decided to pay us an early visit?
Is this it?
Yeah. I'm on my way to the hospital. Meet me there.
Right. Hospital. Don't panic. I'm here for you. All you have to do is breathe easy and breathe often and take it nice and slow. We're gonna be just
fine. Gotcha. See you there.
So, Ghostface, a couple months ago, it looked like our friendship was over because I urged you to see Cars 2.
Yeah.
So you know, see where I'm going with this?
Yes.
So, is Spy Kids All the Time in the World the final nail in our friend coffin?
Yes, yes. Aww. This is the straw that broke our friendly camel's back.
It was such a friendly camel.
Yeah, this movie was awful.
It really was.
And it was just so full of time references. Time. Every other line.
Yeah.
I remember, though, like, halfway through it, like, leaning over to my friend who saw it with and was like, this would make an awesome drinking game. If you drank every time they said time, you could probably die.
It reminded me of the really stupid parts of Friends with Benefits, where Richard Jenkins kept saying, like, life is short and you can't waste a goddamn minute of it. But they took that, like, those 4 minutes of Friends with Benefits and turned them into a children's movie with a lot of poop and vomit jokes.
And fart jokes. So, which is, you know, exactly what you want with that. You want, like, a cheesy moral mixed with toilet humor. That's what kids want.
That's what I wanted from Friends with Benefits. I was watching Friends with Benefits, and I was like, why aren't diapers flying at my face? Why aren't cheese curls raining on me?
Right. Well, I think, you know, there's several bad things about this movie, but I think it can really all boil down to Jessica Alba. Who was, like, just so incredibly bad. I think in the beginning, she's, like, chasing down Jeremy Piven, and she's, like, 9.5 months pregnant or something.
Yeah.
And she, you know, does, like, a zip line and jumps into a car and, like, flips the car over and, like, does all this stuff. And it's, like, so ridiculous. She is so god-awful in this movie, too. Like, half the lines that she's supposed to be saying to Joel McHale, like, oh my god, I'm like a spy and stuff. Like, that was so bad.
I think my favorite one was, greetings, children, I am a spy.
Yeah. I mean, there were so many where she was, like, recorded and being shown on a screen or, like, talking to someone, like, fake through, you know, like, some holographic thing. And it was just so, there was just nothing from her. She was, like, so wooden and just boring. Even more so than when she was in Fantastic Four.
Yeah, two things that Jessica Alba should probably never do again that she does in this movie is, one, act opposite Joel McHale, who is, you know, a guy who is very snarky and funny and knows how to deliver a line. And, you know, if you've never watched Community, you should watch Community. And two, never act on blue screen again.
Yeah, seriously.
Because it just amplified everything that's already so wooden and disinteresting about the way she delivers lines and
everything,
walks through scenes. Well, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because we definitely need to talk about Aromascope because I have a lot of things to say about Aromascope. But one of the things that I was really bummed out about almost immediately in that movie was Jessica Alba is, like, you know, this spy mom in the black cat spy suit thing. And she's chasing Jeremy Piven, who's this henchman to a supervillain called the Timekeeper. We'll talk about that later. The character that Jeremy Piven is playing in the beginning of this movie, his name is TikTok, right?
Yeah.
So she's chasing after TikTok, and they're having a big fight in an alleyway, and she's fighting TikTok and all of TikTok's minions, and her water breaks. Right. I was immediately disappointed that that was not a scratch and sniff number. Because I really wondered what that would smell like.
That would have been like a more educational film.
Actually, let's get right into Aromascope, because I'm sure that her water breaking would have smelled vaguely like candy.
Yeah, they kind of all smell the same, and none of them really smell like anything too distinct.
Yeah, I think the highlight of watching this movie, and I'm not even going to say the highlight of the movie because my highlight came from the viewing experience of this movie, was when these numbers flashed on screen, and there are 8 numbers that appear. There's like a little prologue that Ricky Gervais narrates in the beginning of the film. He also voices a robotic dog. We'll talk about that later too, I'm sure. But in the prologue of this movie, he sort of like narrates how you're supposed to use this aromascope card. You're supposed to rub the numbers when they appear on the screen. It was sort of like the phases that you go through when somebody dies. For me, my first phase was denial because, like, I thought my card didn't work. And then the second phase was anger because I realized that my card probably did work and it was just like a shitty stunt. And then came acceptance, looking around the theater and looking at all these kids around me who were doing the same thing I was. It was just fun to watch these kids like rub their cards and then hold the card up to their nose, inhale, and then look around like, is my card not working?
Yeah, does this like smell like something to you or?
This movie, if nothing else, could have been, I guess, if they did it correctly, just sort of like a complete throwaway, stupid kids movie, but at least could have been like, you know, kind of fun as far as the 3D and the aromascope, which is the fourth dimension that this movie is in. But I mean, both of those I just thought were completely botched. I didn't get anything out of the 3D from this movie.
Yeah, me neither.
I wrote down cheese curls in my notes, and I guess that must mean that the cheese curl scene was in 3D or something.
Yeah, there was a very specific moment where Jessica Alba is about to get pranked by her stepdaughter's, one of her many infamous pranks that involves like blue cheese or ranch dressing or something in like a bag on top of her door frame. The stepson is like, oh no, like don't let her do it or whatever, and he has this huge bowl of like cheese curls on his lap, and he stands up and like the cheese curls should have been like falling into the camera and like into the audience, but they kind of just like waterfalled down in front of us, not on us. I don't know, like it was definitely a missed opportunity. There was several moments where like there was action-y scenes or cute little 3D-ish, you know, dramatized things, and they just like fell flat. They didn't really use the 3D very well, I don't think.
I think that the number 2 smell was supposed to be the blue cheese smell, right?
But yeah, I don't remember. I remember like a bunch of them happened really early on.
I remember number 1 was bacon.
Yeah, which I don't think it smelled like anything.
It just smelled like
paper.
Yeah, we should probably tell our listeners, you know, I'm going to do the obligatory all 2 of them joke, that we both have our aromascope cards.
Can you hear me scratching?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was number 4, and it smells like candy.
I mean, most of them were candy, weren't they?
3, 4, and 5 were candy.
There's a scene in the middle of the movie where 3 numbers pop on the screen at once.
Yeah, that was 3, 4, 5.
And it was hard. It was really hard.
Like, what are you doing? I can't understand this right now.
Yeah, it's like, not only is it in a dark theater, but you're wearing 3D glasses that make things darker.
Right.
And you're trying to, like, hold this card up, like, at some level so that the light from the screen will illuminate the numbers. The really shitty part about it says rub the numbers when they appear on screen.
Right, right.
So I didn't have like a coin out because I thought I could just rub it with my thumb.
Yeah.
And I thought in the beginning of the movie, before the movie started, I thought to myself, well, maybe I should go ahead and rub one of the numbers just so I can see if you're supposed to rub it instead of scratching it.
Yeah.
And this is the best conversation that we could ever have that will totally be taken out of context, talking about taking things out and rubbing them and scratching them. And I didn't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
I was like, what if this is going to be an amazing sensory experience,
right,
and I'm going to ruin it by starting to rub these numbers before I'm supposed to? Yeah, I should have just gone ahead and done it. And when the 3 numbers came on screen at the same time, not only was it hard to see what you're doing because of the darkness of the theater and the darkness of the 3D glasses added on to that, but, I mean, scratching 3 of these things at once and they all smelled vaguely like Trick cereal to me.
Yeah, and I feel like it was like kind of early in the movie, like maybe a half an hour into the movie, and they had already gone up to like number 5, and I was like, dang, they only have like 3 more left for like the next, you know, whatever hour this movie is going. And I think there was probably just a better way to incorporate them, you know, like have the characters say like, ew, what's that smell, or, you know, whatever. That was like, it just didn't seem like they gave you enough, you know, notice to start scratching it so that you kind of like smelled it at the right point.
Yeah, it was very like, here is the gag that it's related to. Here's the number that you're supposed to rub.
Yeah, so it kind of was like lost, because then you were like, wait, was that supposed to be poop? Because like, I smell this and it's not. Maybe they did that on purpose because they knew it didn't smell like anything.
And this movie's version of poop smells like chocolate.
Right. I thought that too.
Which I was weirded out by.
I was like, what are we trying to tell our kids?
Well, also then I just started to wonder if there's something wrong with me that my poop doesn't smell like chocolate.
So really, really your problem with this movie was that it made you question your own, like, hygiene and, you know, yeah, body functions.
This was a roller coaster ride, personally, for me, because I left this movie, immediately ran home, and looked up WebMD to see if there was something wrong with me.
Chocolate poop.
Chocolate poop. Which, yeah, I'm sure if you Google that, you'll find a lot of interesting links. Can you tell that we really don't want to talk about this movie?
I know. There's other things that we could talk about. Like,
wait,
Jeremy,
hold on. Can we, before we,
characters.
I know that you're jumping from chocolate poop to Jeremy Piven, and that's very vital. But I would also like to point out that one of the numbers on this card corresponds to a smell of what I'm guessing is supposed to be boogers.
Yeah, that was weird.
But how do boogers smell? And the short answer is they smell like candy, because everything on this card smells like candy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how can you tell what a booger smells like? Because aren't you sort of like, in theory, smelling your boogers
all the time
yeah, because they're in your nose?
Boogers smell like smell.
But I mean, if my booger smelled like candy, I would totally eat them so much more than I already do.
Yeah, right? I would like want to eat them.
They're probably low calorie. They're, you know,
yeah,
they're organic.
Totally. It's totally organic. Yeah, it's local.
Oh boy. And then the other thing that surprised me about Aromascope is that there's a scene in it that features copious amounts of vomit being,
yeah,
like thrown on bad guys. And I was waiting,
me
and
too.
I feel like my entire row of children, because I'm sure I look like a child molester at this movie. My entire row of children, like, we all had our cards out primed. Like, as
yeah,
soon as the scene.
I was like, when are they going to do it? When's the next number going to like start flashing?
Yeah. And it just missed opportunity because
yeah,
I feel like.
That's what I mean.
Vomit.
I don't think they incorporated them as well as they could have.
Yeah, and vomit has a very distinct smell. There are, like, vomit-flavored jelly beans from the
right.
Harry Potter Jelly Belly line.
Exactly.
And they taste like acid reflux, which is good for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had my, like, card out, and I was ready to rub the shit out of it.
The
minute they got into planes, because I knew that scene was coming, they tease it in the trailer where they're, like, throwing vomit bombs on people or whatever. And then I just sat there. I was crestfallen, Ghostface. I was absolutely crestfallen. But
I totally understand, you know? I think the only thing that redeemed the Aromascope card for me was that, like, number 7 smelled like Jessica Alba's desperation. And it smells kind of nice.
It smells like candy.
Yeah, it smells like candy.
So basically what we're saying is we want to eat boogers,
yeah,
and Jessica Alba's desperation.
Basically.
The only good thing that came out of Aromascope for me is that it made the notebook that I take to all my movies so I can write my notes in it smell like candy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's go back to talking about chocolate poop. And by chocolate poop, I mean Jeremy Piven's delivery of every line he ever said. So, okay, can I just give a recap on the many characters of Jeremy Piven?
Please.
All right, so he's definitely in the beginning, because he's like the henchman for the timekeeper who goes by TikTok, which you've already said.
Yes.
Right? And then as she's on the phone with like her OSS people, you hear another voice on the phone, and that sounds a lot like Jeremy Piven. And you're like, huh, that's weird. Then he shows up at the end of the scene, and he's like, lock them up, boys. And he has like this weird 1930s accent that is so strange. And then, you know, come to find the end that he's like actually this person that was like frozen in time. But once he admits that he's from the 1930s, he stops using his 1930s accent, which doesn't make any sense. Then he's also like the timekeeper, and then he's every timekeeper henchman. Like, and I thought that was actually kind of interesting that he was all of them, that he had been through it. But it was still kind of like, wah, wah, with the way that everything worked out. And Jeremy Piven was so over the top the whole time that it was like awful. It was so bad.
Well, here's the thing about Jeremy Piven. I wondered why early on in the movie the main villain, Timekeeper, or his face is inside a mask that is the face
clock.
Of a clock.
Yeah, and his tie is like a pendulum or some bullshit.
Yes. And I think I gave this movie too much credit. But my thing was, okay, so basically the story of this film is that Jessica Alba's stepchildren, who are played by Rowan Blanchard and Mason Cooke, they're the new Spy Kids. I guess the new Spy Kids for a whole new series, which is probably not going to happen at all.
Yeah.
And the movie reintroduces you to Carmen and Junie, who were the Spy Kids in the original trilogy. And the only one that you see for a while is Carmen, who's played by Alexa Vega. And she mentions to Jessica Alba's stepchildren that her brother is no longer in the division, or something to the effect of, like, he's not around anymore.
Yeah, and, like, we don't speak of him or something like that.
Right, yeah, and it's done in such an ominous way that I thought that the timekeeper was going to turn out to be Junie.
Yeah, me too.
Again, I must have been giving this movie too much credit, because it turns out to be Jeremy Piven in, like, his 30th role in this film.
Yeah.
Do you think that they meant to misdirect you like that, or that was just sloppy plotting?
No, I don't think so. I think they just, like, that was pointless, and so you had no reason at that point but to question it, you know?
Yeah. As soon as they introduced Junie as, you know, oh, he's back, he was just, like, really mad or whatever, but he came, he's back now, he's doing his own thing, but he came back now, I, you know, automatically figured out that it was going to be Jeremy Piven in that mask. And I sort of kicked myself mentally because I thought, well, why else would Jeremy Piven as the main villain's lackey, TikTok, why else would he have this, like, extremely crazy voice that reminded me of Judge Doom at the end of Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously they want to differentiate between all the other characters that he's going to be playing in this movie.
I know, if you're gonna cast one person as multiple characters, it should never be Jeremy Piven.
I was actually reminded of one of the things that you said on the summer preview Scorncast, where you were saying that you were really concerned for Robert Rodriguez, who you know, has written and directed the series, because of his casting of Jessica Alba in this movie, and the fact that he had sort of based this movie on an idea that he had while shooting Machete, because he saw her fiddling with her baby daughter while in, like, full Machete costume.
Yeah.
And that, like, you know, you were worried that this was a situation where Jessica Alba was going to become his new muse, and you were like, I don't know if I can do this anymore with Robert Rodriguez if that happens. I don't think you might have to worry about that, because obviously he has some sort of, like, a bromance thing going with Jeremy Piven. Jeremy Piven might be the muse here.
Ugh.
Why else would you cast him in, like, 30 roles in this movie?
Man, Joel McHale would be better than that. I mean, Christ.
Joel McHale, I don't know what he's doing in this movie. I don't know why.
I don't really know
here?
What anyone is doing in this movie. That's the thing. Like, except for the two kids, no one else really belongs in this movie.
Joel McHale, this is the kind of thing that he would make fun of on The Soup.
Right?
And the two kids, you know, we're into this whole thing where we disparage children now freely on the Scorncast.
Right, yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I found both of them rather obnoxious.
Oh, really? I didn't think they were that bad. I mean, I thought the girl was pretty obnoxious, and the boy was, like, bad, but he had, like, some okay timing and, like, delivery on some of the gags.
I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, he fares a lot better than she does, but the problem with her is that she's just shown to be such, like, an entitled brat right away.
Right, it's really hard to like her ever.
She's presented as this practical joker who likes to dump, you know, blue cheese dressing on people, and I don't know, like, I just found her right away just not somebody that I wanted to spend an entire 90-minute movie rooting for. I had actually never seen a Spy Kids movie when we did our summer movie preview, Scorncast, and based on your complete, like, fear of this movie opening, and I knew immediately that we would have to do a Scorncast on it, which, sorry about that, but I decided, you know, I've got to watch these movies because I've never seen them before. They were just things that I thought I would never see.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was really surprised how charming that they turned out to be. Now, granted, I've only seen the first two.
Third one's pretty bad. The second one is good, and the first one's cute. Like, they're not awful, but they're also kind of like, do we need these? Maybe not.
You know? No. I mean, they're a throwaway, pretty much.
Yeah. You know, to think that they inspired, like, Shark Boy and Lava Girl and Shorts, you know, it's kind of, like, stupid and unnecessary.
And also, I guess, Machete, too.
Yeah.
Danny Trejo is playing Uncle Machete.
Right.
So, yeah. And I guess it's kind of weird how, like, Spy Kids must have inspired Machete, and then, in turn, Machete inspired Spy Kids all the time in the world. I wonder what movies this will inspire.
Hopefully nothing. Hopefully a retirement. As far as, like, the kids go, I found it most annoying that, you know, although the girl was, like, the prankster or whatever, when it came down to it, she got a purse, and the boy got some gloves and, like, boots. And, like, he got to kick people and, like, beat people up, and she got to, like, trip them, you know?
Yeah, the only explanation I could come up with for that was that maybe somewhere in the making of this movie, they had planned to release both of those things, or both of those, like, items as toys. And, I mean, obviously, you're going to market, like, some really cool gloves that make, like, fight noises to boys, and you're going to make, like, a purse with a bunch of spy accessories in it to girls, I guess.
No, it's true, but I mean, like, that bag is totally unisex, is all I gotta say.
Would you buy one for yourself?
I totally would. I mean, I'd probably get the gloves, too, but I'd definitely get the bag. Had some cool shit in there.
Does the bag go with your shoes?
Yeah, right. But it was interesting, though, that when they got into the little machine things, their little rockets, the girl immediately went to the blue one, and the boy was in, like, the reddish, pinkish one.
Yeah, I actually did note that. I thought that was very weird, because as soon as you saw both of them pop up out of the ground,
it looked very boy-girl.
And I thought, actually, the thing that I thought was, oh, man, Ghostface, he's going to have a field day with this.
Yeah.
And then she ran to the blue one, and I was
she immediately crossed over, too, to go to the blue one.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, huh, all right, well, I guess that's cooler than I would have thought.
I guess it gets points for subversiveness right there.
Yeah, a little bit. A few points.
Do you want to talk about Ricky Gervais as the voice of this robotic dog named Argonaut?
Yeah. He actually wasn't so bad. Like, he was one of the brighter parts of this movie, I think. Like, he annoyed me, but I think that his delivery and, like, his pacing and stuff of his lines was totally different than anyone else. But it, like, you know, was a nice comic relief. As, like, the most obvious, like, stupidest character of the whole thing, he was probably, like, the most surprising.
I just felt like he was very restrained. Like when I think of Ricky Gervais, I think of somebody who's like a live wire and he's able to improv things. And a lot of them usually have like 16 layers of meaning. And in this movie, I don't know if it was, this is just what made it onto the screen or this is how his recording sessions went. But there was very little of Ricky Gervais here. It was mostly just, I felt like things that he was asked to say, he said. I mean, maybe he knows this is like a paycheck gig and he just went in there and did his lines and got his money and left. But this was like the least Ricky Gervais I've ever seen Ricky Gervais, or actually heard Ricky Gervais, because he's not actually in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I could agree with that. I still think he inserted himself, you know, as much as he could in the little bits. But I remember there was specifically one scene where I just, like, I could tell that they weren't showing the actual dog. They were, like, showing Argonaut from, like, far away, or showing, like, the kids with, like, Argonaut kind of, like, behind them. And he was, like, talking, but you couldn't see his mouth. And I was thinking, like, at the time, like, oh, yeah, like, this is stuff that he just kind of made up and that they added in. Kind of, like, goes with, like, the larger, like, point that he's trying to make in the scene, so they didn't, like, cut it out. So there's a few times like that where I felt, you know, I was just like laughing at like Ricky Gervais, really, not even this movie and like its lame time puns.
And it's inescapable obsession with poop and butt jokes and farting. I know Robert Rodriguez is such a hit or miss filmmaker. I think he's capable of like better things than this. So it's just strange to see somebody who really seems to be making the kinds of movies that he wants to make doing something like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a scene near the end of this movie where Alexa Vega, who's reprising her role as one of the original Spy Kids, she's all grown up now, she's about to fight some bad guys, and they, like, a bunch of bad guys sort of prepare to gang up on her, and she actually says, "Oh shit, Taki mushrooms."
Yeah, that was awful.
I was like, oh god. Yeah.
Well, and even the actor that plays Junie, too, like, he tried, but there's a part where Jessica Alba and Carmen were frozen or whatever, and he, like, isn't frozen, and he's like, oh, man, I'm not frozen. I have to do something to help them. They're probably not frozen either, those kids, those spy kids. He was, like, doing, like, a soliloquy or something, but I was like, dude, do you know what movie you're in? Like, why did he have to say that?
As someone who just recently has watched those first two films, I will say, though, it was kind of nice to see them, like, that they're growing up and they're not, you know, like, hanging out in limos on the way to nightclubs with their underwear missing. I don't know, like, it was just, they seem like such nice Christian children.
That's true. They do seem like nice Christian children. But, yeah, I mean, they were just bad actors.
Who, Alexa Vega and Daryl Sabara?
Yeah.
You think in this one or in all of them? One. But I mean, not to use my defense of Noah Ringer from Cowboys and Aliens again, but nobody was really good in this movie, right?
I guess.
I guess mean, Ricky like Gervais had his moments, you said, but most...
Ricky Gervais had his moments. I think the little boy was pretty good.
Fine.
I'm just gonna say it, you know? I mean, I didn't think that those two previous Spy Kids were really picking up the slack, you know? As far as representing the alumni, they weren't really bringing it.
They could have just been sad that they were here doing another Spy Kids movie. I was sad for them.
They're probably really happy that the franchise isn't taking off.
Yeah, I feel like somewhere they're sort of like looking at the box office returns and they're like, whoo!
Dodged a bullet with that one.
Looking back, what shocked me the most was the realization that the first three Spy Kids were really big hits, because I don't really remember them being, you know, that much of a thing.
Yeah, that's the thing, I think, with all of these movies. And even, like, Sharkboy and Lava Girl, like, they all did relatively well for being what they were, which is surprising and weird, and then also not at all. They're not necessarily the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, you know, or, like, any of the Disney movies or whatever, but they had their time.
I guess there's kind of a charm to what Robert Rodriguez has done here, you know, in these movies, not necessarily in this one. There's sort of like a homemade feel to most of his special effects. Like, these are not hugely budgeted movies. These are very quaint movies. And, like, there's a scene, I think, in this one where they pull off the one of the dog's legs, which is where they find out for the first time that he's actually, like, a robotic sentry. And there's a sticker on the mechanics of the leg that's, like, attack mode or, like, play mode or something like that.
Sensory mode.
And it's just like, you know that Robert Rodriguez just did that with a label maker like 2 minutes before they rolled.
Yeah.
And like that kind of stuff I find charming, but I guess it was just lost in this sea of crassness. I mean, the other movies, I can't speak for the third one, but you know, the first two movies were not this anally obsessed.
No, they weren't. They definitely weren't. And this one, it was like, you know, Spy Baby. Like, come on, really? Like, well, I'm not sure what age group they were going for. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the whole like DIY feeling that you're saying is really great and has a certain charm. That's like true for his stuff to a degree, though. You know, I mean, you get into stuff like Once Upon a Time in Mexico, where he like wrote it and directed it and edited it. And, you know, he does that for all of his movies.
Sure.
And like, I don't know that he always should. That's a lot for one person to do. And I know it's like his vision, but like he might not be the most capable editor.
That's exactly what I mean when I say that he's making these movies that he wants to make and they're his. And you sit there and watch the credits and you know that there are very few people to blame.
Yeah, other than him. That's why it's so weird. It's like, you really want to put your name on this? Like all over this?
We'll just cross our fingers and hope for another Planet Terror, I guess.
Right, something. Yeah, go back that route.
So it's time to grade Spy Kids All the Time in the World?
I'll give it a D+.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a D+, too, which is good that we're agreeing, because I feel like this is the first step in our healing process.
Exactly.
So, I'll see you in therapy. And that's going to wrap up another episode of Scorncast. Thanks to Ghostface Milla for watching this movie and putting up with me. Thanks to Bug for our theme music. Thanks to you for listening. And as always, you can visit PopScorn at scornpop.blogspot.com, comment on our posts, maybe give them a +1 or +2, and you can email PopScorn at scornpop@gmail.com, even though you probably won't. Promotional consideration for this episode of Scorncast has been provided by Desperation, a new fragrance from Jessica Alba, now available at Penney's.